Welcome to week three of
Magically Amateuring.
Hey guys, this is Ben.
I'm Maria.
This is Megan.
Dun dun.
Ben's putting on a tie right now, everybody.
He's going to a wedding.
Watch out, ladies.
He's wearing brown pants.
And a gray sweater. Okay, let's stop describing. Let's
describe. Is really that a gray. Faux pas?
I'm bored.
This is blue. Right?
No.
That's blue.
Hold it up. Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see it.
In recent news, Megan is colorblind.
You guys, it's genetic. My grandpa was colorblind, but I'm not a boy, so I can't be.
Look Unless your mom was.
No.
I think girls can be colorblind.
You just need both carriers.
Can they?
Yes. They definitely can.
Let's make a Punnett Damn square.
Just like girls can be blind.
I thought that colorblindness was only on the Y chromosome.
No. It's mostly in the Y chromosome. Okay. It's actually only in the X chromosome. But there's no version of the gene on the Y chromosome. So if you have it in the X chromosome and you're a dude, you're fucked. Oh. But if you're a lady, then you still have a shot.
Oh.
Well, everybody, episode three. It's time for us to talk about what we have done since our last episode. And one of the main things I want to say is we do have an email address for you guys to contact us. Send us love notes, evites, e-cards.
Anything you want to hear about on the show, more relevant.
Right. It's magicallyamateuring@gmail.com.
Mm.
If you get a bounce back, you're probably spelling amateuring wrong.
Just spell amateur and then put ing on the end. Oh. Quick tip.
Good advice.
Quick tip.
Lessons learned since last week. Yesterday, we were all working on some draft pick strategies. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Right, because I think one of the ways, you know, to really improve our drafting is to just go through it, do some practice drafts, get some feedback, talk about why this card's good, why this card is not so good, because I've recently had some poor performances in drafts. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
So, obviously...
Thank you for your honesty.
You're welcome.
I was very honest.
Welcome.
Let's give the listener a moment just to be honest with whoever's in the room with them.
Good idea. What if they're by themselves?
That's the safest space to be honest.
But sometimes people have a lot of trouble admitting stuff to themselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
guys, don't laugh. They just said something really honest and personal and we just laughed at it.
Oh my God, I just heard it. Tweet.
Listener, I appreciate your honesty, even if Meg and Maria can't be serious enough for this tender moment.
No, I definitely can't. I'm going to keep moving on, talking about draft picks.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, obviously, when you're looking at the very first pack that you've opened, first card that you're going to pick, the first thing that you're looking for is any bombs, anything that if it's played, your opponent needs to deal with it pretty immediately, or... you're going to win the game.
Yep.
But supposing that you open that first pack and there's not a bomb in there, what are you going to be looking for?
Well, you're going to be looking for stuff like removal, good removal. You're going to be looking for, you know, cards that are in colors that you like, colors that you know really well. And you're going to be looking for stuff that keeps you open. So maybe a card that's one color or even like an artifact or something like that that gives you the most flexibility with future picks.
Cool.
Don't lock yourself down if you don't have to.
Right. It's just like dating.
And just like always the wedding date, you're going to.
Always date as many colors as you can.
That's racist.
Wow. Yep, you said that.
It's the opposite
one of
racist, right?
No, it's
not. It's
affirmative
That's... action dating.
I think, wait, let's clear this up.
So you're going to... I don't want to go into it.
I think that it's racist if you date them only because...
I just use a red flag system.
Okay.
If a girl does something that rubs me the wrong way, I just tie a red flag to her. And if she ever has three red flags tied to her, that's how I know she's not the one for me.
Sure.
Mostly, right. I date a lot of girls that are good at untying knots.
Sailors.
Yes. A lot of seamen. Or women.
Okay.
Okay.
So, say we've got our first pick.
Yep, say we've got our first pick. It is a bomb.
Sure.
And let's say it's blue.
Yeah.
We're going to go standard.
It's double
like,
blue.
Yep, it's a double blue.
You can't splash this bomb.
No. Unsplashable. What do we do next? What are we looking
second
for in our
strategy.
Second pick?
Well, we want another blue card ideally. Because we want to play that bomb. One way to think about it is, you know, this bomb is probably good as like two other picks normally would be. So it's like even if we take another card and then we realize we can't go into blue, it was kind of worth it. But the problem is you don't want to get so married to it that, you know, you spend your second pick taking a card that's only worth like a fifth pick. Because if you do that, then that, by the time fifth pick comes around, you might be taking cards that should be taken eighth pick or something like that. You're going to end up with lower card quality overall.
So how far down would you go? Like, say you picked a blue and your second pick was not ideal. Would you pick a third or fourth pick blue over something else? Over like a red or, sorry, a green, say, that
well,
you couldn't play with it?
If the second pack doesn't have a good enough blue card and the third pack doesn't have a good enough blue card, you know, by the time the fourth pack comes around, I'm thinking, well, the blue plan is not coming together. I need to start thinking about what's my backup plan. Otherwise, you know, I'm just going to lose the whole draft.
Yeah.
So at that point, I start looking at, you know, what other colors can I be in?
So do you take, say a third pick blue over a first, you know, a really pretty good green? Which one do you do?
If I already have the blue bomb?
Yes.
So I already have the blue bomb, and it's second pick. I would probably take... You can give a slight bonus to any blue card that's in there, but you do need to be... I do need to be honest about, like, what else is in the pack. You know, am I being realistic about my chances of winning with the deck if I continue to draft it? Mostly I'm looking for signs that blue is being cut off from my right, or signs that any other color looks like it's really open. And generally, personally, I've had problems taking a bomb, then drafting a deck, and just ending up with something that's unplayable just because I stuck with that color, whatever the color of the bomb was. So a lot of times I'll make a second pick that doesn't go with the bomb just because I know that otherwise, like, my tendency is to keep going with that bomb and to try to stick with it even when it's not working. So sometimes I'll do it just to break myself out of that mindset.
Nice. So if you see some good cards that are coming your way in the color of your bomb, go with it.
Yeah.
But if you're not seeing anything that's of good quality, you might want to diversify a little bit.
By the fourth round, by the fourth pick, would you say?
I'd say so.
Awesome.
And it does really depend on what your options are. Like, how good is your on-color card versus an off-color card? And is it possible you can play the off-color card with your bomb and stuff like that?
Nice. Which would be splashing, right?
Well, no. I mean...
Or just...
For example, if we had a blue card... And our second pick is a really good white card. We can play both those in the same deck and return to Ravnica.
Right.
Nice.
I had a splash story from a draft where I was playing Azorius and I splashed black for a couple of stab wounds. And someone said to me, those are not adjacent colors. You shouldn't do that. And that was something I hadn't even thought. You know, because I'm like, well, so what? You know, so is any color I play with this. It's not going to be, but.
Does adjacent mean that there are some dual lands? So I'm thinking, like, splashed black.
Yeah.
So in that case, if you splash black, you can put some, say, Transguild Promenades in your deck. And that would be good. But if you were white, blue, and you splashed red, there are also some red-blue dual lands that you would then be able to use. But there aren't any white-black dual lands, and there aren't any blue-black.
And there is less card synergy, right, between black and blue and white?
Well, because of, it is because of the dual lands, because the dual lands correspond to the guilds. And in this set, there are 5 2-color combinations that that they have gold cards for and they have dual lands for. And so, yeah, if you do blue-black in this set, there's no gold cards in those colors. So you're getting, you know, you have fewer options of powerful cards, and there are no dual lands. So that makes your mana base a lot less reliable. So, yeah, you normally wouldn't splash blue-white. You wouldn't splash black in a blue-white deck because it is, it's opposite in the color pie. But
color pie.
Color pie. Yeah, that's a real thing. And actually, but actually, the color pie is a different thing than the guilds. Yep.
Okay.
Sure, Ben.
Is it like a color wheel? Sure.
It's like a color wheel, yep, with the 5 colors.
Can you tell us, can you just give us a little rundown of what what is next to what?
Sure.
I bet...
Oh, white, there it is.
White is next to blue. I'm looking. I pulled out the back of a Magic card. These guys are 100% sleeves all the time, so they've never seen the back of a Magic card. But there's 5 dots, and one of them is white and blue and black and red and green. And so these colors are, like, white is aligned or allied with blue and green.
Meaning?
Meaning they're ally colors. They're cooperative. Allies. They're friendly. White likes blue and white likes green, but white hates black and white hates red.
So what's going to happen when Boros comes knocking?
Well, yep. I mean, the Boros Guild, which is red and white, is an enemy-colored guild. So for any color combination, the color combination is either enemy colors. For any two-color combination, I should say, is either enemy colors or allied colors. And in this set, I think it's actually... like 2 and 3, because you've got Celestia, which is an allied guild, Azorius, which is an allied guild, Izzet, which is an enemy guild,
Golgari.
Rakdos, which is an allied guild, and Golgari, which is an enemy guild.
So my question is, what if you're not playing Return to Ravnica and you just are, where you, you know, like M13, where you just have single colors?
Yeah. The biggest limiting factor really is, how are you going to make your mana work? How are you going to make a consistent mana base that lets you splash, lets you cast all your cards? And sometimes the answer is, if you just don't have a lot of cards with double casting costs, sometimes you can just run 17 basic lands and just have 2 of them as your off color. Usually in this set, because there's so many gold cards where they have a requirement of 2 colors in them, you're just going to need dual lands and stuff like that. And each set has a different amount of color fixing available. So sometimes there's lots of good cards that help you get out all your colors of mana, and sometimes there's not. In this set, there's obviously all the dual lands, and there's also like Gatecreeper Vine and Axebane Guardian. So there's a lot of options if you're going to do all those colors. Now, Maria, in your deck, the biggest problem with your deck was that you had, I think all you had was 1 Azorius Guild Gate.
Yes.
So you just had 1 white-blue dual land.
Yeah.
And then... 3 swamps, and then the rest were islands and plains.
Yes.
And so that's a little bit hard on the mana pool. It's not actually the worst, and you're splashing for 2 stab wounds and an ultimate price, so those are really good cards. So, you know, it might have actually been worth it. But one thing I'll ask is, like, when did you, at what point in the draft did you take those black cards?
Let me think. I might have taken a stab wound like 2nd pick.
Okay.
Sometime, and then when I got another one, maybe it was like a 4th or 5th pick.
Okay. So, do you think you could have, instead of playing blue white, could you have chosen to play white green or blue red?
I was actively avoiding to play anything red.
Oh. Is this a prejudice that you have?
No, it's a love that I have for red.
I think you may have been overcompensating.
I think I was, because I got some awesome Rakdos cards.
Because if you can pick up, even 1 dual land that is in black, then all of a sudden you're in pretty good shape, even if you're only splashing black for those few cards.
Well, it was an experiment. It paid off a couple times. The rest of the time, I was mana screwed. Yep.
And you certainly learned something.
Yeah, certainly.
Question and answer. Maria, you've got the question this week.
I do. So, on my iPad, which I got last episode, if everybody remembers,
yay.
I have Duels on the Planeswalkers on it. And when you're playing, you know, it's much like Magic Online, you cannot make a move that is illegal. Or, you know, that is not technically correct.
It's the biggest problem with Duels of the Planeswalkers. It won't let you cheat.
Damn it.
It's a lot of Maria's strategy.
Okay, Duel of the Planeswalkers.
You guys are, this is not what
Why
I mean.
Why can't I cheat at this game?
What I mean is that you have to be technically perfect with when you do stuff. Oh. And when you're playing versus another human.
Yeah, no takebacks.
Okay, can I just say somebody.
I'm a big fan of takebacks.
People do takebacks all the time.
Yeah.
They'll say, can I. This was the good one from the other. Can I control Z that? I'm like,
control Z.
Can I control C some of my tokens for free? Anyway, so like, what I'm saying is that in real life, things are not played perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, yes, at a friendly draft, that's true. At, you know, a PTQ or something like that, like, you're well within your rights to say, no, you can't take that back, or to call a judge.
Sure.
Some stuff like tapping mana, like if you tap mana and then you decide, oh, I want to tap that differently, I think usually that's like, yeah, you can take that back.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you cast a card or if you untap and forget to use something at the end of a turn, yeah. I mean, technically.
That's a little dicey.
That's dicey.
My question related to, I was using that guy that you're just saying in there that you didn't like.
Public enemy number one.
Paralyzing Grasp? Okay.
No. It's the red card. The tiny little dragon flyer.
Oh, we're not talking about a specific person that I hate, but just a card.
Yeah, we can do another podcast about that.
So this is like Dragon Whelp or something. It's a 0/1 with flying. And for
one red
mana, you can give it +1/+0. That's fire breathing.
Right. And so when I would play, I'd play it out and expect to be able to pump it or whatever. And then I was like, what the heck? When it wouldn't let me activate that ability. But then I found out I have to have declared him as an attacker, have them have declared their blockers, hit pause, and then pump him. And so that's something I learned, that that's technically the right place you have to do it. After attackers and blockers are declared.
I think I was playing
and also probably when you'd want to.
But yeah, your last possible moment and is after they've declared blockers.
Yes.
So it's tricky. And that's like that would be in the declare blockers phase before the combat damage phase.
Right.
But they don't really use the phases or like the names of the phases in that game because they're trying to simplify it a lot so people can learn how it works.
Quite right.
Awesome. So, should we move on next one?
Well, yeah. This is something that we were talking about a few days ago, and it's good to mention.
Yep. So we have some combat math practice that we do sometimes on the internets. And during this, we were talking about First Strike versus Death Touch. And in terms of which one trumps which. And the answer that we
Sorry.
The answer just is that First Strike wins over Death Touch if it kills the creature.
Yeah.
Because say your guy has First Strike, he's a 2/2 First Striker versus a 1/1 Death Touch. He First Strikes for 2. The other guy is dead before he's allowed to deal any damage.
Yep.
Awesome. The end.
You guys, I don't know how to tie a tie.
Yeah, First Strike and Death Touch and that stuff can be kind of tricky to think about. But yeah, I mean, you'll get used to it eventually. You just want to keep in mind that, you know, First Strike damage happens and then stuff dies and you actually have priority and chance to, you know, cast instants and all that stuff. And then normal damage happens. So yeah, if you do it right, the other creature won't even have a chance to do their damage because they'll be dead before they... It's like waking up and someone has stabbed you. You don't really have a chance to put on your mithril coat.
Sure. I think that's...
Because I have one under my bed for in case someone comes
you
and stabs me in
that.
The middle of the
you
night.
You should wear that at all times.
It's kind of heavy.
Mithril, you don't know what mithril is. Nope. Mithril's not heavy at all. Okay. It's like wearing a t-shirt.
God damn it.
I sleep with a grenade under my pillow.
Yeah, do you?
Hold on. I have a quick question that just arose. Because I opened Duel of the Planeswalkers. Yeah. What is swamp cycling?
Swamp cycling means you can pay, when this card is in your hand, you can pay the swamp cycling cost and search your deck for a swamp, reveal it, and put it into your hand. There's also an ability called cycling, which lets you just pay the cycling cost, discard the card, and then draw a card. Yeah, it's from some old set.
Hmm.
Cool.
They'll probably bring it back at some point, so you guys should be ready for swamp cycling.
New rules.
Okay.
Ben.
What up?
What are your new rules to teach us this week?
We're going to talk about priority this week. Do you guys know how priority works? Priority. During every step of the game...
Use it in a sentence.
Priority. Ben talking has priority over Maria talking.
Interesting use of mm-hmm. the phrase priority.
Country of origin.
Country of origin, Canada. So priority is... it's what lets you do things whenever during Magic, if that makes any sense. So at any point when you could do something, that's when you have priority. So during each step of the game, you have priority to do something. First, the player whose turn it is, and then the player whose turn it is not. And if they both choose to do nothing, then you move on to the next part of the game. So if you're just playing a funsies game with someone, or if you're not being super technical about it, priority gets skipped all the time because... there's a lot of times where you normally wouldn't cast anything. Like, usually, you don't need to cast anything during your instep. But technically, you do get priority then. So if you wanted to, you could do it. Hmm. But, you know, during a normal game, it's usually pretty loose. But keep in mind, if someone skips a step when you did want to cast something, you can always be like, whoa, buddy.
Yeah. Another
back the
place
truck up.
Where priority is important to remember is always... when someone plays something, you have a chance to answer it. I'm thinking of, we were playing with just the regular 2013 decks.
Yeah.
I flashed in a card. You used an ability. I flashed in a card as a blocker. You used an ability to get rid of that card before I could even declare it as a blocker.
Right. So I let the spell resolve. But then, even after it's resolved...
she still hasn't declared it, technically.
Right. This is, you have to cast it in the declare attacker step if you want to use it as a blocker, because that's your last chance. But then I let it resolve. Then each player is going to get priority again before we move on to the declare blockers action. So during that declare attacker's priority, I killed it because I didn't want you to block.
Yep. And I think that's an important thing to note, because I really feel that most people would say, no, I declared this as a blocker. I'm not going to take the damage, even though you're destroying it.
Yeah, a lot of people have pretty loose understanding of how that works. Like, a lot of people, when you go to attack, will say, well, in response to that attack, I tap your creature. And that's not really how it works. You do have priority right before you declare attackers, but you don't get to do anything in response to declaring attackers. It's just that normally nothing happens there. So normally I'll just say, oh, I'm attacking. And then if you have a chance to do something, you say, no, stop. You didn't give me a chance to do that. Now, if I think you're going to do something and I don't want you to like sneak up on me or know who I'm going to attack with, I'll ask, I'll just say declare attackers. And that means, do you pass priority to the declare attackers step? If so, you have missed your chance to tap anything.
Yeah.
And so a similar thing works with declare blockers.
I hope everybody's taking notes out there.
Yeah, write this down.
Another time when priority was interesting was this week when we were playing with Return to Ravnica, and the Lobber crew has that you can tap it to deal one damage. Mm. And then it also says on the card, untap anytime that you cast a multicolored spell.
Yeah.
So you can cast that multicolored spell. I guess sure. This isn't priority. This is just about the stack.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So last week.
Mm-hmm.
So last week, guys. Let's just say this is an addendum.
Yeah.
So you can cast that multicolored spell.
Mm.
The ability of untapping Lobber Crew goes on the stack.
Yeah.
So you can then tap it, mm-hmm. deal the damage, and then that resolves, and then the untap ability resolves.
Yep, that's all true. And actually the way priority works is you actually get priority immediately after you do something. So that means after you cast that multicolor spell, you actually have the chance to respond first. So your opponent literally can't even do anything between the time when you cast that spell, put that thing on the stack, and then tap your guy. So that's why it's like super correct, because there's like nothing they can do in that span of time. But you know, usually you're also fine just tapping it first and then playing the spell. Usually it does not come up.
Just really quickly, let's ask Siri what is priority. I don't know how to turn it on.
Okay, hold on. I have to go through a few steps here.
Uh-huh.
Because she's not on right now.
Siri, what is priority?
Okay, here goes.
Oh.
Wow.
She gave me a little definition.
Priority, parentheses, periodical. Basic properties.
It's a magazine.
Oh. Website, www.prioritymagazine.com.
It's about business and industry.
Well, there you go.
Wow, that's all good subscriptions.
Circulation, 722,000.
Bimonthly.
That's not a lot, right?
I don't know who's going to read
it's
this.
It's more listeners than we have.
You don't know that. You don't know
that's
that.
Fair. That's fair. All right. Cards of the week from our Innistrad draft night. Maria, you want to start?
Sure. Well, we played draft night, and much to our surprise, we drafted Innistrad. When we got to the store.
To be clear, we drafted 2 packs of Innistrad and 1 of Dark Ascension.
Correct.
Mm.
And we weren't expecting this, but it was kind of neat.
Sneak attack.
To go in blind.
You got ambush vipered.
Yes.
Did you say by a bird?
No.
Ambush viper. It's a card. It's from Innistrad.
Okay, I don't have that, obviously.
Ben was being clever.
You're welcome. There's my joke.
Thank you.
Since you're looking, I'll go ahead and talk about mine. So, in my second pack, which in this case was Dark Ascension, I pulled Geist of St. Traft, which is pretty sweet.
Everybody was basically crapping their pants over him.
That's true. That's
they really were.
He's very popular in magic circles. He's just a cool guy, you know.
He looks really sad in this picture.
Oh, yeah.
He probably would have a lot of friends if he tried.
So he's a legendary creature. He's a spirit cleric. There it is. He's a cleric. Of course he's sad.
Yeah. Clerics are always moping about something. How they died. Whatever.
Is a geist? What is a geist?
A geist is a ghost.
That's what I thought.
Just
oh.
Just a cool ghost.
He's not only a cleric, but he's a dead one. I get it.
There's a card in Innistrad called Geist Catcher's Rig.
I've seen that.
It's basically the Ghostbusters car.
I was going to say, is it the Ghostbusters, like, vacuum?
It's, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's the Innistrad version of the Ghostbusters car.
So this guy's a 2-2 with Hexproof. And whenever he attacks, you get to put a 4-4 White Angel token with flying onto the field, tapped and attacking. And at the end, you exile that token.
He only costs 3, FYI. Mm-hmm.
Costs 3 and he attacks for 6.
That's pretty good.
4 of them in the air.
4 of them in the air.
Which is pretty badass. To help him out, because he is only a 2-2, I ended up putting quite a few instants in my hand.
Yeah.
That give +1/+1 or +2/+2 to help protect
Smart.
Him a little bit.
Or Feeling of Dread. That's a saucy number.
There we go. I have that one in my deck, too.
Lets you tap 2 creatures, so if they're like, oh, I'll just block that dude, and then
yep.
I'll only have to take 4 damage once. No. No. She's going to tap both of your blockers, hit you for 6, and then next turn, she's going to flash it back and do it again.
Yeah.
So get ready for that pain.
So pretty sweet card. I did have a question, and this wouldn't apply so much in Innistrad because Innistrad doesn't have the populate ability that Ravnica does.
Yeah.
But hypothetical world where this card meets Ravnica. I'm attacking.
Yeah.
Could I declare attackers. This angel gets put in. Could I at that time lay down a populate?
Yeah.
And then make another copy of that angel?
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Absolutely. And
yeah, but it's going to be sick though too.
Yes. But that one would stick around.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all true.
That's probably part of why Innistrad, this card can exist in Innistrad, because if it existed in Ravnica,
well,
that would be a sucker punch.
In Ravnica Limited, yeah. If they're in the same limited environment, that would be pretty brutal. The card would be insane. They do exist in the same constructed environment. So, like, people build constructed decks with this card. And they could also put Rootborn Defenses in if they want. I've never seen anyone do it, but it's something I've thought about. I don't know if it would be any good in that deck or not, but it seems kind of sweet.
Awesome. So that's my card from Innistrad. Sweet. Probably going to sell that sucker.
Sweet. I'll buy it.
I built a red-green werewolves deck from Innistrad. Mm. My favorite card that I had was a Predator Ooze. 3 green to cast. He's indestructible. Whenever he attacks, I get a 1/1 counter on him. And whenever a creature dealt damage by Predator Ooze this turn dies, I also get a 1/1 counter, and he's initially a 1/1.
Yeah, he can get pretty big.
Yeah. I loved him. That's just really unique, I thought. But the card that did probably the most for me was the Dark Thicket Wolf. 1 colorless, 1 green, 2/2. And for 3, he gets +2/+2 until end of turn.
Yeah, but you can only use it once per turn.
Yes.
But once is usually enough.
That's all you need.
Yeah, this guy's hard to deal with. You put him down on turn 2, yep. He's a 2/2. Okay, not that impressive. But then when you attack with him on turn 3, they can't block him at all. If they block him, you just destroy whatever their creature is for 3 mana.
Yep.
So, yeah, he pretty much always gets in there. And then also towards the end of the game when you're getting them down and you're trying to end their miserable existence, he helps there too, because usually you've got lots of extra mana, so paying 3 to do 4 damage is
no problem.
Sweat.
No problem.
Yeah.
So I loved both of those cards.
Those are good cards.
In my little aggressive deck over there.
I also have Hollowhenge Spirit, which is a 2/2, costs 4 mana, and it has flash. Flying, and when he enters the battlefield, you can remove a target attacking or blocking creature from combat.
So yeah. Where does it go back their hand?
No, it just means that
just that time.
They, if they declared it as an attacker, you can flash this card in, you can block one of their attackers, and you can remove another one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a flash card that doesn't block just one, it takes care of 2 of their attackers.
Yep, basically.
Card advantage.
No. It's not card advantage.
It's just advantage.
It's just
advantage.
It's a tempo, basic advantage.
It's tempo advantage.
Okay.
Because you're depriving them of a renewable resource, which is the ability to attack or block. That's what they thought they were signing up for when they cast that creature, and you're just taking that away from them.
Like taking away wind power?
It's like taking away a pension. Or at least stealing someone's pension check.
Or stealing somebody's solar panels.
Wow.
It's a renewable resource.
Maria,
results.
Do you know where my solar panels are?
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm just going to go heat myself up in my little sauna I built.
You wouldn't know how to use a solar panel if it fell on you.
How dare you?
Our euphemism of the week.
Yeah.
This comes to us from Ben.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember saying this?
No. 2 drops?
Yeah.
Is that like boobs? It's like boobs, you guys.
I was thinking it was poop.
Oh, poop.
I have to go and do a 2-drop.
Sure, that works.
Do you like
that?
Oh,
man, guys. I've got a 2-drop. That I need to put down bad.
If only I had the mana.
Because I'm just going to have to shit my pants.
Oh, God.
In this case, mana is a toilet?
Guys, right. Oh, man. I just drew an off-color 2-drop.
Were you splashing for gold at the same time?
Okay, that's okay. A euphemism.
Love it. Yep. All right.
History shit.
So for this week's history shit,
yeah.
I was introduced to something quite unique. Elphidex.
Sure.
Am I saying that right? Why are you laughing?
Well, the original set was called Alpha, the original Magic the Gathering set. And we watched a YouTube video of some people who bought an Alpha starter deck and then opened it up. They don't actually have starter decks anymore, but they used to have... just like a booster pack would be 15 random cards, a starter deck would be like 60 random cards.
Sure. And so what year did this come out, do you know?
It's like 93 or 94, something like that.
Okay. And there were some insane cards in there.
Sure. I mean, the pack they opened didn't have any sweet cards. But yeah, there's some insanely overpowered cards in that set. Mostly because... they designed it, and they're like, well, these cards are kind of overpowered, but, I mean, they're rare. It's not like people are going to buy hundreds of packs of these cards just to find the ones they need, right?
Wrong.
Well, they were wrong, but they're like, well, and if they do, we'll just be stupid rich, so it won't really matter, and we'll fix it later. And that's what happened.
It looks like one of them was, the getting stupid rich part?
Yeah, they sold a lot of cards, and that's why Magic is still around 20 years later.
That's why you're hearing this podcast,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, we wouldn't have been born otherwise.
What do you think made it so popular in its release?
It's a really well-designed game. Even now, I think about aspects of the game like how attacking and blocking works and how priority works and the different phases of the turn, and I'm always really impressed at what a great job they did, and even the rules that have been there since the very beginning of the game.
Right. And do you think there was a call for this in 93 that I mean?
A call? A void?
Yes, that they filled somehow.
Richard Garfield actually said that the reason he created this game was so that people would have something to do, like, between playing games of Dungeons & Dragons. But yeah, I mean, I think it was inevitable. I can remember before I started playing this game, I collected like superhero trading cards, and I was always like, wouldn't it be sweet if I could play a game with these cards?
Yeah.
And it turns out it is pretty sweet.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of research into some of the earlier cards, and there were some that were just crazy, like Black Lotus, Time Walk, Time Twister, and the Mox cards.
Yes.
See, I have pulled up on the iPad right now a Time Walk
that is eBay.
On eBay. It's in mint condition and its price is $5,488.
Yeah, this is rated BGS 9.5 mint condition. This is gem mint BGS 9.5.
What's BGS
9.5? I don't have any idea, but they've sent this card to like a grading service. I don't know how much this card is worth if you're willing to have like a non-mint condition copy, probably, you know, $500 or something like that. But yeah.
Do people still play this card?
Yes. There are still formats where this card is legal, but it is restricted to one copy per deck. There's also right now a Magic Holiday Cube on Magic Online where you can get on and you can draft cards like this and the other insane cards off this list. These cards are part of the Power 9.
Right. And Black Lotus allows you to have 3 mana of any color, and it costs nothing.
Yeah. But it's only once.
Yeah, you have to sacrifice it. But it allows you to do some pretty ridiculous things on your first turn. Most vintage, like there's a lot of vintage decks that will win on the first turn, like easily.
This one is, all right, dude, in Time Twister. Time Walk just lets you take another turn after.
Yeah, that's all.
I mean,
that's
okay.
Just.
Sorry, that's not how I meant it. But Time Twister.
Yeah.
Set Time Twister aside in a new graveyard pile. Shuffle your hand, library, and graveyard together into a new library and draw a new hand of 7 cards, leaving all cards in play where they are. Opponent must do the same. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Ideally, you play this card after you've played out all your cards, but your opponent still has a full hand of cards. That way you get to draw 7 cards, and they just get the same number of cards that they had.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd.
We're going to have to talk about formats sometime, where, you know, where this is legal, you know, and what does this all mean?
This is legal only in Commander and is restricted in Vintage, banned in Legacy.
Yeah.
That means nothing to me at this point.
Vintage, basically, they keep around so that people can play these ridiculously expensive cards that they still own. But yeah, everyone pretty much agrees that, like, oh, this card was overpowered and it makes for an imbalanced game.
Yeah. So, I mean, do people still play Vintage games?
Yeah, certainly. A lot of Vintage tournaments actually allow proxies. You can, like, make a proxy of these cards just because they're so expensive and there's so few copies in existence that it's hard. I mean, you have to spend several thousand dollars to even get your deck started. Kind of absurd.
So we're looking at Mox Emerald, and it says, tapping this artifact can be played as an interrupt. What does that mean?
So there used to be a card type called Interrupt, and it was like an instant, but it was like faster than an instant. This is like before the stack existed, and it was like once you let a spell resolve, all the stuff that was out there resolved, and like the only way to counter a spell was to cast an interrupt. But it was like, so then like you had to tap stuff as an interrupt, like in case you wanted to use it to cast an interrupt. Yeah, it got pretty complicated. So eventually they simplified those interrupts away.
And banned them.
They didn't ban them.
And burned them with fire.
There's lots of spells that were interrupts, and now they're just instants, and it's fine. You guys don't need to concern yourself. I never actually had a solid understanding of how that exactly worked, and I was pretty glad when they just got rid of it, so I didn't have to worry about it anymore.
Nice.
Ben, are we going to make you late for a wedding?
Yeah, I have to go to a wedding right now, you guys.
Okay.
Let's finish up really quickly some great moments in Addiction.
Yeah, that'll be our last thing.
Let's see. Mine is just my very last day of work was on Friday.
Yeah.
And instead of cleaning up my desk, I spent probably a really solid chunk of time.
It was a lot of time.
Yep, doing some combat math practice
online.
That was really valuable.
It really was. I learned a lot. But I maybe should have been cleaning my desk. Maria?
Well, recently I acquired
a gastrointestinal problem?
A goat token. I just thought that was so funny to say.
Yeah,
goat token. Yeah. And I put it on my brand new cubicle wall I just got.
Yeah.
I put it up there, and I put it up there with pride. Because I think it's
people
so
ask questions.
So ridiculous. No, the first person who asked me a question about it, I maybe will have some respect for.
Sure.
Right. So remember, you can contact us at magicTheAmaturing@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts, anything you want to hear us talk about on the podcast, anything you want us to learn, and then comment on, since, of course, we are amateurs just learning the game.
Just like you.
Just like you out there. Or, you know, maybe you're a pro and you're listening to this, just having a laugh at our stupidity. Our naivete, if you will.
That's fair. We're just jesters here to entertain you.
All right. I've been distracted by Duel of the Planeswalkers and missed you guys signing off.
Sure. Can I...
bye, guys.
Hey. Hey, bye, guys. Mm.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Hey.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Say bye, Ben.
Hey, bye.
Does it smell like cats in here? So I miss you.